I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we will talk with the woman at the center of the storm of debate regarding education and public policy in Indiana, State Superintendent of Public Instruction, Glenda Ritz. We will talk about testing, about school choice, about the bills designed to strip her office of power, and most important, about what is in the best interest of Indiana school students. If you would like to join this important conversation, please call us toll-free at 866-476-3881. Email is nolimits at WFYI.org. Facebook is nolimits WFYI. Twitter is WFYI. Now, this news.
No Limits is made possible by Apparatus, managing IT infrastructure so companies don't have to. It's advanced IT made simple. Learn more at apparatus.net.
Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We are talking today with State Superintendent of Public Instruction, Glenda Ritz, the woman who is sort of at the center of the storm these days. Superintendent Ritz, welcome back to the program.
Thank you. It's a delight to be back.
We're going to talk about all sorts of things. I'd like to invite our audience to join the conversation by calling us at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits at WFYI.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. Well, we'll talk about the larger issues, but obviously we were talking before we went on the air. You're sort of at the center of what's probably the largest news story in the state right now. The discussion, dispute, debate about the length of the I-STEP tests. And I'll summarize real quickly. What's happened is the governor has taken a couple of steps, I think, said that the test should be shorter. At one point, he said that you had not properly informed the State Board of Education about the length of the test, and he's hired a couple of consultants, and your office has said, you know, we explained there were going to be more questions on the test and that it wasn't likely that we were going to be able to do it in the same amount of time. I gather that you and the governor talked last night and worked through some of the issues, but could you sort of talk to us about where things are right now and then how they got there?
So first of all, you're talking to a superintendent who ran for her campaign on a platform of less testing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that we just need to get that out there.
Okay.
And so when we were mandated by the U.S. government to actually do a college and career ready assessment this year, even though we made new standards, which delayed us for a year, actually transitioning to that, we were mandated in this year to have a test operational, aligned to our new standards. And that means we had to do several things. We had to make sure that we are, in fact, the whole entire test is what we call a field test. In other words, they're all brand new questions, all of them. And so we created a test, an operational field test that we were mandated to do. And we called in CTB, in fact, at the board's request, they wanted to talk to CTB, our vendor, on August 6th. And on August 6th, we presented that there was a presentation that said, here's what's going to happen to the increase in the questions as we do this test. So there was full knowledge that this test was going to be substantially increased in the number of questions that we were going to have to do with students in both Part 1 and Part 2. So we had only really from the summer till December to get the test finished. It's a very short amount of time to actually do an entirely new test, make sure that it's going to be valid and reliable. And so in January, we began discussions on putting time to each of the sessions and each of the questions that the students were going to experience. We want to be sure, I'm a student advocate, we want to be sure that students have enough time on brand new questions, more rigorous content, to have plenty of time to answer each of the questions. And I would suspect students want that as well. So we assigned it. And when we administer tests, we get that right out to the field as soon as we can. And that's what we did. So on January 26th, we actually knew the entire length of the test and each session and each question on January 23rd. And on January 26th, we released it to the entire field. And that's what happened. And so as a result, we now have state board members and others who are wanting to have a decrease in the length of the test. So the department did what it was supposed to do. It developed the test as we should. Now there's talk about how can we lessen the length of the test. So I'm working with the governor's office to see what we might want to do to change the plan, so to speak, on what we were originally asked to do.
How much of this is a product of the fact that originally Indiana was, how much of it is a product of the decision not to be part of Common Core and to impose some additional state standards in regard to the tests?
Well, that all happened when 1427 was passed. You are absolutely correct.
Okay.
The state was on track to transition to college and career-ready standards. As a result of everything that we've been doing, we weren't allowed to actually do a transition assessment, which is what the department wanted to do this year. We wanted to do a transition. Students would take the old I-STEP. We would pilot some questions in the fall. And then the next year, in 15-16, we would take, the real test. We wouldn't have to have such a combination and a long test. So we weren't allowed to do that, really, by the U.S. Department. But we're going to be having more dialogue about what it is that we can do. I wish the governor would have called me up, and just said, hey, Glenda, here's what I want to do, because I never have any problem shortening a test or looking at more options, or, we didn't have any indication at the department that they wanted to change exactly what it is that we developed.
Mm-hmm.
I'm perfectly fine having conversation about this test and what is it that we might be able to do. I don't know how much we're going to really be able to do that doesn't take either state, the General Assembly taking action, or mm-hmm. the U.S. Department taking action.
So, we're right now, you're supposed to start the testing, in a matter of weeks, right?
Actually, we have schools that ready to test next week.
Okay, so a matter of days.
You betcha.
A matter of days, and we're trying to figure out how to change and shorten the test. What does that do to the validity of the test then? I mean, that data, if we're going to put students through this, I mean, are we going to learn anything from it, or?
Well, I'm absolutely committed to making sure that we have a valid and reliable test. The stakes are high in the state of Indiana. Not only is it used as the basis, student performance used as a base for accountability, it's used for teacher evaluation. In fact, at the special meeting that I've called for Friday with the State Board of Education, I'm going to be calling upon the General Assembly, and I would like to have the support of the State Board of Ed to actually not assign the grades this year, and not assign the accountability to the teachers, because that's the stress that's on the students. Every student that takes this test, they know that their performance determines the grade of the school. They know that. And to put that kind of stress on the students when they're taking a brand new test that they've not experienced it before, much more rigorous than what they've done before. Kids are going to be actually demonstrating and providing evidence about their answers. They're going to be showing how it is that they know how to do problem solving. They're going to be demonstrating knowledge in a whole different way. And so to put that added stress of knowing that how they perform is going to affect the grade for their school and their teacher's compensation just shouldn't happen this year. I would be irresponsible if I did not request that of the General Assembly to alleviate those two things. The federal government has already said that and has given all states permission during your first test of college and career readiness. If you want to actually not assign a rating and you want to, not tie the teacher's evaluation to the test score, you have our full permission to not do that. So that's what I'm going to be speaking about. In addition, you'll hear me recommend that we should not test in social studies. Social studies is not required of the federal government. It will take General Assembly action, though, to actually not test in social studies. And then you'll probably hear me talk about iRead 3, which is an additional test that third graders take that I feel should not be an added burden for third graders this year.
We are talking with State Superintendent of Public Instruction, Glenda Ritz. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You also can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. We've gotten, and we probably need to allow you to respond to a couple. We've already gotten some emails from listeners. This one is from a listener named Carrie, who says she's a mother of a fourth grader and pre-K student. Says, when did you know about the length of I-STEP, and was it lengthened because of an item you added that the board advised against?
Well, absolutely not. For that last question, all the items that are on the test are aligned to the new Indiana academic standards, every single one of them. And with that, we knew the number of questions we were going to add in August. So we already knew that. At that board meeting, as I said before, CTB presented, we knew that part one was going to be doubled. We knew that there were going to be substantially more questions added to part two, going from 45 questions to 64, you know, in math and then language arts. And I'm probably not getting the exact numbers right because it differs by a little bit for language arts or math. But we knew that already. We knew the actual time attached to it, as I said, on January 23rd. And on January 26th, we put that out to the field. They needed to have time. They needed to make their schedules. I did take to the board at the last board meeting. We extended the time windows in which you can administer the test. So that means that we lengthened that. So they had like 3 weeks to give the entire test, and they make their own schedules. So if they wanted, they could have one test session each morning. And throughout that time, they could make their own schedules. And that's always up to the schools as to how they feel best for the test. Testing climate.
And I'm going to ask this question because we're going to get to the issues of the relationship with the State Board of Education, the relationship with the governor and legislative leaders in a bit. But this is sort of a lead up to this. I think there's no other way to ask this question than to be frank about it. I mean, how frustrating. I mean, as you say, you did run on a less testing platform. The buzzwords for the other side of this argument have always been more accountability, more assessment. And, you know, at some level, where did they think that was going to come from? You know, that if you were going to do more assessment measures and try to evaluate both teachers and schools, where was the time going to come from in which that could be done? Do you feel, I guess where I'm trying to get at, do you feel as if you're being asked to hold the bag here for other people's decisions?
Well, I'm responsible for administering the tests according to federal and state guidelines. It's that simple. Actually, things need to be changed at the federal level. We're required to do a pass-fail test at the end of each grade level. All kids have to take the very same test. And so that's not the type of teaching testing I think we should be doing. So, you know, right up front, I'm forced to administer a test that I feel we shouldn't be giving to our students. At the same time, we do need to assess our students in order to look at accountability. All those are federal requirements. They're state requirements. So I must administer them. I've been encouraged the conversation at the national level because we are now in the midst of reauthorizing No Child Left Behind. Mm-hmm. And they're talking about testing. I welcome the entire conversation about testing because we need a testing system that actually is going to inform our what it is we do in our classroom. And we need to take the high stakes away from that so that we really get down to the business of what kids need in their classrooms.
Could you describe to me what an ideal test would look like? I mean, if we're going to do this, yeah.
I actually can.
Okay.
So what I would prefer is there's two types of tests, John. There's the summative, which is what I-STEP is. You give it at the end. Everybody takes it. It's pass-fail. And then there's what we call formative test. And basically, that's the kind of test where you know where the child starts. For instance, their reading level at the beginning of the school. You may assess in the middle and you know at the end. That's all we need.
Yeah.
Honestly, that's all we need. We need to know where children start. We need to know where they end. That shows growth. It's more fair to evaluate teachers. It's within the year in which you have the student. And we don't need to have this additional burden of a summative test at the end because we should be able to measure that as we assess kids, you know, just a few times a year. And we're doing that anyhow. So I'm all about a simplified system. I think board members and I are in total agreement that we want a testing system that is far less complicated and less burdensome on the schools and, you know, the students. The students are taking so many tests. They're either taking tests to prepare for the end of the year test or, you know, they're taking tests to make sure that they're going to do all right on the end of the year test because there's high stakes.
We are talking with State Superintendent of Public Instruction, Glenda Ritz, the woman who is at the center of the great education storm of debate here in Indiana right now. If you would like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You also can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. I can see that the phone lines are starting to light up and we're getting email questions. One thing I would ask of listeners is that you make sure that your questions are concise when you get on the air. I'm John Kroll. You are listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking today with State Superintendent of Public Instruction, Glenda Ritz. If you would like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Bruce, welcome to the program.
Yes, thanks for having me on.
Certainly.
I just want to say two things. I'm a Republican. But I am just totally pleased with Glenda Ritz's job, and I just think when the history's written, it'll be a great chapter on, I think, an educator who stood up and is trying to make a difference in Indiana education. And unfortunately, I think she inherits years and years of bad policy that the prevailing party has just keeps passing on. So I just congratulate her. Keep up the good work. Stay in there. Continue to be courageous. And the last thing is, I'm so disappointed that the media just seems to be so biased against her. And so I'm just so proud of her. And like I say, being a Republican, I'm just so supportive of her. And I'm just thrilled by the accountability she keeps bringing up and keeping the discussion going. So congratulations. You're doing a good job.
Thank you, sir. And I want to say that statistically, I was elected by Republicans.
Thanks very much for the call, Bruce. We've gotten an email from a listener who says somewhat the same thing. It says, I'm an Indianapolis resident and a longtime conservative. I want my state representatives to know I am deeply offended that they would try to mitigate practically retroactively the authority of the person that was duly elected to try and correct the mess known as public education in Indiana. She inherited a mess from Mr. Bennett, Tony Bennett, who was your predecessor as State Superintendent of Public Instruction, and she deserves a chance to change things with all due cooperation. The Republicans had their chance to correct the system, and they not only failed, they made things worse. It's time to change course. I guess what I want to take from Bruce's call and this email is, why is there so much, in your opinion, so much animosity directed toward you? Anyone who is around the State House right now knows that the level of invective that comes your way, particularly from members of the opposite party. What produces that, do you think?
It was just anger that I got elected. It wasn't part of the plan. Mm-hmm. And so when I was elected, one of my first visits to the governor, I took his roadmap. Mm-hmm. I took it with me. And I said, here's how I can get you to where you want to go on your roadmap. Instead of getting some great cooperation and working together, I thought that's what we were going to be doing. I get the CC formed, you know, the new education agency. I get the board questioning everything that I do. We've been having we've been having the disputes. That's what I call them, disputes over whose job is it to do what things, because the State Board of Education wants to oversee my office. I'm a separate elected official. I, I just feel like I haven't been given the same playing field that former superintendents have been given to actually run my department without interference, for the governor to actually call me up, like this testing. He could have just called me and said, "Hey, Glenda, you know, let's explore some ways to you know, shorten this test." And I would have said, "Hey, yeah, I can get you the information and everything you need on this." Instead, we did a press conference. You know, it made it look like I didn't do what I was supposed to do. So that's what's been happening. It happens all the time. Despite that, John, I actually love my job every single day. Mm-hmm. I have a picture in my office of when I was sworn in at Crooked Creek Elementary School. The kids made the form of a heart and sent me away with love, and I had printed at the top of this picture, it's a huge picture on my wall that says "Inspire the Love of Learning." So every day, I know why I come here. I know why I work for kids, and I am just delighted to be in my position to advocate for kids in Indiana.
The other part of that question is, though, it's gone beyond just invective or communication. I mean, there are now bills in front of the legislature designed first to remove you as chairman of the State Board of Education, and other measures that are really designed to curtail the powers of your office. How do you respond to those efforts?
Well, they're choosing to ignore the will of the voters. That's what they're choosing to ignore. And I think that the voters are having their say about that. There's a perception out there that somehow, you know, I am turning on and turning off switches of people contacting the legislative members. And I'm not doing anything. To be perfectly honest, more than a quarter million people are following me. Mm. And then there are education advocacy groups out there that have about the same number of followers. These groups were around before I was elected. And when I actually said, "Hey, I'm running," then they're like, "You know, I think she's somebody that's got talent. She's somebody that's right in the field of education that we can trust to bring about some good education policies." And they are speaking. And when, you know, your last caller, mm-hmm. you know, those who are speaking the loudest are Republicans. And one of the groups that supports me the most really is Republicans for Writs. And they are dedicated to making sure that we're moving on a good path to education policy. And I'll say openly that there aren't big differences in many cases between education policy. I just want to have the freedom as the superintendent to enact things in a way that's going to make sense for kids in the classroom, because there's ways to enact things that are good and there are ways to enact things that are not so good. And we've spent my predecessor's years not being so good. And I just I believe in strong teacher evaluation. I believe in strong accountability. I believe in testing measures that actually inform what we do in the classroom. Mm. And when it doesn't, then I need to speak up about it.
We've gotten an email from a listener named John, and if you would like to reach out to us by email, you can do so, finding us at nolimits@wfyi.org. John says, "Would stopping the wars produce the best result for students? If so, what can you do to stop the wars, to privately compromise with either the governor, legislative leaders, or members of the State Board of Education?"
Well, I know that you don't see this in the news very much, but I have been able to work with the members of the board, the roundtable, the leaders of the General Assembly on various topics that require me to do that. So one of them was the standards. Standards don't get approved unless you work with all the entities to make that happen. Assessments right now. Willing to have conversation and work with whatever. I'm all about making sure that assessments are right for kids. We're on accountability. We had a panel that was appointed by all four of us, the governor, myself, the speaker, and the pro tem. And we had a panel of 17 people, 13 of them were educators who live every day accountability systems. We now have that in rulemaking process. That doesn't happen without working together. So we've been working together all the time on what really matters for kids. The disagreement has been about whose job is it. Okay. Mm-hmm. The State Board of Education used to have its budget under the department. Mm-hmm. And we used to that's how it was managed. Now it's a separate agency. It's a separate entity. It has its own staff. And there's a lot of controversy over who's doing what. Mm-hmm. I actually hope that there's a study session, that the General Assembly has a full study session this coming summer to really talk about the roles. Because things that are written in law have been there over 100 years. And they were put there at different times. The roles are blurred many times on who does what. And that's really where our debates are, on who does what. So I want to get that resolved. And I brought that up many times now to several legislators. And I hope they're listening, because it's the roles that we need to clarify, make sure that we have in place.
We are talking with State Superintendent of Public Instruction Glenda Ritz here on No Limits. Ben, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I am the husband of an educator. And first off, Secretary Ritz, we both want to thank you for what you're doing for education and in the state. And secretly, we both hope that you'll run for governor. but we were wondering two things. First, you know, at what point do you sort of take off the gloves and try to delve into the political fight that's really sort of hampering your abilities to do the things you were elected to do? I mean, again, it's no secret that you were elected by 57,000 more votes than the governor himself, which is unheard of. And then secondly, just to maybe move the conversation a bit away from the political fight, I'm wondering if you could just talk a little bit about what you've learned in your time as Secretary of Public Instruction, or Superintendent of Public Instruction, and sort of how that's going to influence, you know, what you do in the future. So I'll take a answer off the air, and again, it's an honor to speak.
Thank you.
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Ben.
So on the political side, you will always see me be respectful. I believe I'm being respectful to every person, and where we may have differences of opinion, you will see me share what I call information. I am an information specialist, and some people call that a librarian. I totally believe that information informs the conversation. So I spend a great deal of time when we are talking about things, saying to my staff, get me information on that. Get me this data. I need to show them this. I need to show them that, wherever policy might be leading. And I spend a great deal of time doing that. As for you know, taking off the glove, that's not my job. Whose job that is are the voters. What you have seen me do is make everything public. I believe that when we have the conversation about education, it's a public conversation. And this is one position, the Superintendent of Public Education, that has always been elected by bipartisan, and it's the one position people care about deeply, and they don't necessarily go to the ballot box and vote along partisan lines, and that's always been the case. So, you know, I really rely upon the voters who elected me to share their message about the political piece. And what have I learned now? So I'm going to just briefly tell you my actual qualifications for the job that I have. And I want to let you know I love my job every single day. And I've always been involved in education policy. So at the school level, I was always on the top committees making sure kids got what they needed in the classroom. At the district level, as a teacher leader, I worked with school boards and the administration to be sure that classrooms had what they needed for students. And at the state level, working with my association, I had myriad of opportunities to not only talk with legislators for the last many years, 34 years, regarding education policy. I got a chance to work behind the scenes and actually inform the law on Senate Bill 1 in 2011. I became very versed on speaking and testifying in front of the State Board of Education. I know how government works. I know how legislative action is taken. I know how policy is formed. And then at the national level, I'm a National Board Certified Teacher, and I served on that board of directors for 7 years. So I got to see from a national perspective education quality and teacher quality. So I am all about, what have I learned? I've learned that the politics sometimes overtake common sense, and that I was elected as an educator to focus on education. And that's what I do every single day. You will not hear me really talk about the politics of things. That is not how I feel you elected me. And I'm focused on what's needed for students.
We've gotten in. I'm going to deal with this question because we've gotten a lot of emails, and Ben just alluded to it in the phone call. Do you have any plans to run for governor?
Well, I've announced my reelection for superintendent. I did that in Wayne Township in front of about 2,000 teachers, educators. And so that's the job I'm focused on now. I can't really tell you what might happen in the future. I just let you know that right now I'm focused on the superintendency.
Okay. We have we've gotten a lot of email questions. I think this one is from the McGee family. And she says, why do you only put an emphasis on traditional public schools? I am a Catholic school parent who pays taxes, and we take the I-step as well.
Oh, God, goodness. I don't know that I said public schools. I think I said all schools. All schools who take the assessment, all schools who receive state money have to take the assessment. And so I'm concerned about all children who take assessments. And we need to have a better assessment system. We're in the RFP process right now, looking at what that system might be. There's going to be some decisions made regarding that. And so, like I said, I welcome the conversation about testing.
We've also gotten an email from Michael, and I'm going to synthesize this. It's about the validity of testing. And he says, what are the smallest or least number of questions that can be asked about a subject to accurately find out if someone correctly understands the topic or concept? And then he follows up, how many changes in curriculum and testing have occurred in the last 6 to 12 years? And then the last question, can one test evaluate student work and teachers' effectiveness? Basically, I think it sounds like all of these revolve around the theme of, you know, how reliable an instrument is any particular test for giving you an understanding of how well the process is working.
Well, actually, this is a person who actually knows a little bit about the testing system, so I appreciate the comments. So, first of all, in terms of the amount of questions that you might need to show validity and reliability, that's exactly what's happening on this year's I-STEP, and really part of the reason it's a little longer. Since no students have seen any of these questions, they're all being seen for the first time. You have to give students the opportunities to have various questions on the very same kinds of topics and pieces, because at some point, depending upon how the students actually perform on them, some questions won't count.
Mm-hmm.
And you always have to make sure that students have enough opportunity. So that is important. That's very important in the testing to make sure that students have enough opportunities so that we can have validity and reliability on that. In 2010, we switched from our old Indiana academic standards. And I believe the last time that the old Indiana academic standards were changed was in 2006. They were updated. 2010, they went to the Common Core. In 2013, we've gone to the new standards, and voila, we have to have a test ready tied to those standards in 1415 that was required under the U.S. Department of Education.
Gotten a tweet from a listener named Robert, says, how long does it take to redesign the A to F system and design tests? Weren't these issues known at the very start of your term?
They kind of were, except at the start of my term, 1427 was passed. So that forced us to
redo. People who do not speak government all the time.
They say, hey, we're going to not do Common Core. Okay, and we're going to have our own standards. And so that process began shortly after the first term in my term in the General Assembly. And so that really started a whirlwind of timeline because we knew we were going to be required by the U.S. Department to actually give college and career ready assessments. And so we had to get our own college and career ready standards. Then we had to tie them to an assessment. We've done that this year. And so, you know, we have to go forward with that. So, yeah, there's been a lot of changes, a lot of things to do. My department has just, I can't say how wonderful the Department of Education is in making sure that we are able to meet all of these requirements under the General Assembly.
We are talking with State Superintendent of Public Instruction, Glenda Ritz, here on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. And I should say that this program, like several others we've done, including the one we did on school choice a couple of weeks ago, is part of American Graduate. That's an ongoing community conversation sponsored by and created by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and other interested partners, designed to set students and other young people on the path to success by getting to their high school degree. Again, we are talking with Indiana State Superintendent of Public Instruction, Glenda Ritz. I am John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We are talking with State Superintendent of Public Instruction, Glenda Ritz. Henry, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you. There are so many issues here, I hardly know where to start, but I'm going to try to be concise. Years ago, we started this discussion of when do we do evaluative testing. It was designed to be at the beginning of the following school year so that we knew where children were so that we could instruct them appropriately. I'm an old leftover educator, but just spent the last 30 years in the corporate world, so I know a little something about both. And the other subtexts here are the privatizers and schools really should be run as business, and neither of which wholly, perhaps in part, belong in the area of education. I'm so glad Glenda is with us, is doing the work. As long as she's around and as long as she's able to make her voice known and her direction felt, I feel I can have confidence in the school system in Noblesville, where my grandchildren attend school. I have told my children to get the heck out of Indiana if the crowd in the State House for political purposes and all sorts of other reasons holds sway. For the life of me, Glenda, I don't know how you stand it. You're an amazing human being. You must sometimes feel like you're the only sane person in the asylum. And that's the end of my remarks.
All
Thank
right.
you so much.
Thanks much for the call, Henry. Well, that's got to feel good to hear.
Yeah, so one thing that he brought up that perhaps I should touch on is he talked about 2008-09 when we actually had a fall ISTEP test, mm-hmm. and then we went to the spring ISTEP test. That was also a year in which we froze accountability categories, and schools were not placed in accountability. So the stakes of the test were not there for students. And really, that's what I'm asking the legislature to do again. We have such a change in what it is we're going to have students experience that I want to have a freeze on accountability this year. And of course, the added stakes of teacher evaluation.
We've gotten a tweet from someone who's identified simply as Hoosier for Quality Education. I don't know if that's part of the group Hoosiers for Quality Education. And says, Ritz refers to accountability for adults as high stakes. Isn't learning for kids high stakes every year?
Well, I'm not sure what's meant by that. But for the students, the students shouldn't be having the stress of high stakes put upon them for the sake of the adults. So the students should be able to actually do their best, perform what it is that they need to do on their assessment, and it should be about them. We take what is a test that's made for students to see how students are doing, and then we've added the high stakes for adults. We've added the high stakes of grading our schools. We've added the high stakes of teacher performance. Those tests have never been designed for those purposes. And any test vendor who offers the tests and helps develop a test will tell you openly that they are not designed for that, that their tests are designed to see how students do. And that's how they should be used. We've also gotten away in the whole nation. This is not an Indiana issue. This is the entire nation since No Child Left Behind and the actual requirement that we actually have these tests this way being administered at grade level, pass-fail in the nation. And so, you know, all around the nation, we're talking about why are we adding the high stakes to this? We need to know how our students are performing. You betcha. And we utilize that information for student reasons. But, you know, kids shouldn't have to have the added stress of the adult pieces put on them when they take their test.
We are talking with State Superintendent of Public Instruction, Glenda Ritz. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Again, I'd like to remind everyone, we got a lot of calls, so please keep your questions tight. Richard, welcome to the program.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call. Glenda, I am so delighted to hear that you may be running for, or are evidently are running again, for State Superintendent of Public Instruction.
You just got her to raise her eyebrows. She thought you were going to say governor. Go ahead.
Well,
go ahead.
I could be happy with that, too, maybe. Glenda, I think that the head of any education system should be a thoroughly dedicated educator. I think the educators know best what's best for children, and that's where the focus should be, in my opinion. At the national level and at the state level, is anyone looking at other education systems globally? Because some of them have been outperforming us according to various assessments. In Finland, they've been able to come out at the very top level in those assessments, where the United States is further down the list. When I want to learn something, how to do it really well, I seek out the best teacher or coach that I can find. And I think that nationally, and certainly in the state, we need a vigorous dialogue, conversation about what is the best way to do this. Is anyone looking at the best around the world?
Try to get you an answer for that, Richard. Thanks very much for the call and the question.
So actually, the answer is yes. I am a prolific reader, and I do quite a bit of study on what other countries are doing and their education systems. And I actually am going to have an opportunity to go to Finland here this summer. I've been invited by the EF Foundation, a personal invitation to go. That's a foundation who works with student exchanges across the world, and they're having a student summit. And I'm going to get to go to Finland and meet with people in their education program. So yes, we should be learning from everybody. I am a very open-minded person. When we have conversations, I don't ever have one way in which we get things done. We have a conversation about where is it that we want to go? How do we get there? What are the ideas? And is it right for kids? I am always about, is it right for kids in the classroom? Because that's where the learning occurs.
We've gotten an email from a listener named Sherry, and if you'd like to reach out to us by email, you can do so at nolimits@wfyi.org. Sherry's question is, what is being done to close the achievement gap between urban school districts and suburban school districts in Indiana? Gary, Indiana schools, for instance, received an F rating and IPS schools a D letter grade. What support do those districts receive to help improve the achievement of their students?
Oh, boy, do I love that question. One of the first things that I did upon coming into my tenure was to form Outreach for School Improvement. The department used to have a division called Turnaround, and it was staffed by about 11 people, and they were tasked with going out and monitoring the low-performing schools that may be in different areas in Indiana. And so I knew that was not the way to really provide support. So we have an outreach division for school improvement. We have 13 coordinators around the state of Indiana who are hired and work within the region in which they serve. So they know their schools. They're highly dedicated and qualified educators themselves. They know what good instruction looks like. They work with the schools on school improvement. They know those school improvement plans. So just in one year, we've had a net of over 106, I think, schools that actually have gone from low performing to A, B, or C schools. And I couldn't be more delighted about that. But it's not even about the grades, because we're in the midst of changing our accountability system and how you figure those grades. It's about actual performance. When my staff come to me and they say, hey, Glenda, some schools went from D's to C's, I say, you know what? I don't want to look at the grades. I want to know, did they increase performance? Because that's what it's all about. And so we have been very successful in one year. I couldn't be more proud of our system. And we've also, at the department, been able to what I call take down the silos. So we have groups of people at the department who are working on very complex issues with schools, making sure. And so in 1 year, we used to have 5 F school districts. We now have 1. And we are so focused on that one. You know, I have so many personnel that are working on this, working with this one school district to make sure that we're going to be going in a good direction and have lots of educational supports in place. So we are dedicated at the department to making sure that we are moving the needle on performance with students. But the test scores don't tell everything. So we closely look at those school improvement plans. It's about, you know, what is it you're doing within the school to have good relationships with kids, and what does that look like? How are your disciplinary policies put in place? What kind of positive behavior supports are there? So our outreach coordinators, they work with everything from teacher evaluation to classroom instruction. They actually observe classroom instruction in the schools that they visit. And I just couldn't be more pleased with where we're headed to making sure that students are well supported.
We've gotten a tweet from a listener named Tasha. Says, Ritz was plaintiff in voucher case. What would she say to voucher mom, kid assigned to failing school? No school choice? I mean, I'm assuming, are you opposed to vouchers across the board?
So, yeah, I'll be glad to actually address that. So, First of all, everybody needs to understand, I never want students to be in a situation in a classroom, in a school, where they're not getting the best education that they can get. So my mission at the department and the department's mission is to build an education system of equity and high quality. And you do that from the bottom up. I don't necessarily believe that you just need to switch schools. I certainly feel that we should be able to build within our systems great schools, and I totally believe that that can happen. I've got many programs going on with highly effective teachers. We don't utilize them as much as we should and are in our lower performing schools to really make a change in how it is that we're working with our children. It's about working with kids who may live in poverty and come with challenges. And since I touched on that, the Department of Education has partnered with WFYI to actually do a documentary called The State of the Classroom. Mm-hmm. And I invite you to view it on February 26th at 9 p.m. on PBS. And it's going to be on stations all over the state of Indiana. And it's really going to take a good look at the challenges that our students enter the classroom with and what kind of supports do we need to have in place at all schools to be sure that we have equity in students getting support and being able to get what they need to succeed. It's all about putting the right things in place. I am all about that.
We also have gotten several questions on this subject. I'll pull the one. It's a Facebook question from Valerie, but we've gotten emails on the subject. And Valerie just says, I would love to hear your thoughts on the opt-out movement in which parents are not allowing their children to participate in high-stakes testing.
So, yeah, I can touch on that a little bit. First of all, the state of Indiana does not have an opt-out provision. So that's the first thing that you need to know. And then things start to come in play as parents may want to opt out of testing. So the U.S. government requires a 95% participation threshold. Mm-hmm. And if we don't have that kind of threshold in our testing, then they start putting sanctions on the state. It'll probably perhaps be monetary, that we may owe money back, because we're expected to have a 95% participation rate in our exams that we do have. And so those same kinds of sanctions are placed upon schools. Okay, so schools have to have a 95% participation rate in their schools. If they don't, then they lose a point. And remember, it's only a 4-point system. So they lose a point or two, depending upon their participation. And that's a 1 or 2 letter grade drop automatically, just for not having enough students participate. So, you know, we're giving the first assessment for our new College and Career Ready. And, you know, parents should be interested in seeing how their children are going to perform on that. They should want to know, what is the rigor? What is my child going to be expected to do? And I hope that they will have their child participate in the assessments. We are doing everything within our power to be sure it's an assessment in which students have plenty of time to work the questions, as well as making sure that it's an assessment that's valid and reliable. We want students to be stress-free. I want to take away the accountability and the high stakesness of it, so students can just go in there, experience it, do their best, because we're going to take a look at their performance after we give the test, and we're going to say, hey, this is what works and this is what doesn't work. I want kids to be stress-free when they take this assessment. So I guess that's what I would say to them. I say, you know, you should want to know how your child's going to do. It's the first time we have ever given it, and it's going to be the baseline for which we're going to continue to do college and career-ready assessments.
I've gotten a question from a listener named Michael that I'm going to try to abbreviate here in the interest of time because we're getting close. Michael's question is, you know, there is some evidence, and he cites a study from 2005 that says that students actually perform better on high-stakes tests than they do on low-stakes one. Your response?
Well, I guess what I would say is that it depends on what the stakes are. So, first of all, there's no evidence in Indiana that students performed poorly in 2009 when we went to the spring assessment, when we didn't put the accountability categories onto schools. So I think that students tend, and you need to realize that our students today, they have spent since, you know, 13 years. They have spent 13 years taking tests required by the U.S. government, and they are practically immune to tests right now. They take so many tests, whether it's at the local level or whether it's at the state level or whether it's mandated by the federal level, that they are, you know, they are taking tests all the time. I think students are well informed about taking tests, and they just need to do their best, and I think they know that that's what's expected of them. I think that testing climates are certainly important. It always needs to be positive. It needs to be a positive testing environment and not a stressful one. It's also shown that when kids are under immense stress, they just don't do as well.
We see from all of the questions we've gotten here today just how high the emotions run on both sides. I mean, the people who are fervent in your defense, fervent in criticism of you. Is that a good thing for the children of this state?
It's a great thing. The conversation needs to happen, or we don't move ourselves toward a testing system that is common sense and good for kids. So I welcome the conversation. And if you haven't noticed, I make everything public. There's transparent, public talk about it, conversation, dialogue, discourse. I welcome it all.
Well, let me ask this then. In the spirit of keeping that kind of conversation going, and I promise this will be my last question here because we're just about out of time. If we invited you back, and we know there are a lot of questions here that people haven't gotten a chance to ask, and I apologize for that. We are going to try to work on that. But if we invited you back and, say, invited a member or two of the State Board of Education to have a public discussion about this in this format, would you come back?
Well, I don't know if that's – I don't know how much of that is allowed with Open Door.
Okay.
So we would have to investigate that. That's my first response. Because we always have to be careful of that. I'm never opposed to having the view. And we actually have that conversation every State Board of Education meeting.
Well, I'd like to thank you very much for talking with us. We've been talking with State Superintendent of Public Instruction Glenda Ritz. Again, I apologize to all of those listeners whose questions we could not get to. I am John Krall. You have been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Executive producer, Michelle Johnson. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive media coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And board engineer, Joe Hatcher. Abby Terzini screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.